I was 12 when the reactor 4 at Vladimir Ilyich Lenin nuclear power plant in Chernobyl exploded back in April 1986. Back then, in Iceland, everybody watched the TV news. There was a single channel, Icelandic State Television, and I grew up on the floor in front of the TV. There were news every night, and I took it all in. There was no panic that I can remember, although the news was full of dread that never really touched us. Apparently, people were worried about buying Prince Polo, a popular Polish chocolate bar, as a result, on the chance that it might be radioactive. We were pretty innocent. We had no idea, except that the radioactive cloud didn't reach us at the time. And soon enough, it was out of sight, out of mind for us, on our island way out there in the North Atlantic Ocean. So, 33 years on, enter an American screenwriter, best known for Hangover 2 and Hangover 3, enter a Swedish director, mostly known for his music videos, and all of a sudden, the world is all in. The drama, the attention to detail, the production design and the soundscape, oh my god, that excruciating soundscape, and the sheer horribleness of it all. What is this, though, really? I mean, is this the truth? After all, the main theme in the show has to do with how lies affect the narrative. It seems to me that this TV show has been released exactly at the right time, a time where truth is not a thing you can count on anymore. Perhaps this is an anthropological study about the human condition, our best traits and our worst traits. Maybe it's a political study about how totalitarianism breaks us. I don't know if I'm any closer to the truth now, at 45, than on that floor at age 12. Whatever this is, it has been one hell of a ride. So, today on The Conversation, Chernobyl.
There are opportunities in life for gaining knowledge and experience.
So let's have a conversation.
Okay. What would you like to have a conversation about?
Welcome to the podcast. How are you, Tigve?
I'm fine. I am waiting to open my beer, though. What do you think? Should I just go ahead?
I am too. Yeah? Please do. Let's get this ball rolling. Are you having a Hoegaarden over there?
No.
No.
I have one standing by, of course.
Of course.
You know, emergency Hoegaarden. It's a Berliner Weisse. It's a German thing. But it's not like this Munich thing. It should be a little bit different than the traditional German white beer. But let's see. It is pouring quite, looks
nicely,
good.
Yeah, this one is not
but it doesn't
old,
look so
stale.
White, does it?
Yeah. It has a bit of a hazy look to it.
There's a fruity smell to it as well.
Oh, there's a pineapple in it.
Yeah. It's like an alcoholic fruit thing. Juice. It's weird, man. I'll be needing that emergency Hoegaarden, I think.
I think so, too.
Jeez.
I mean, you should experiment with other brands of beer, not just Weiss beer. Apparently, many of the Weiss beer has fruits in them.
Yeah, but this is too much.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't like lager anyway. So,
no. All right.
Okay. What about you, Rune?
Speaking
what are you
of
drinking?
Lager,
yeah.
Speaking of lager, I am going to open my beer, and that is a ale. Number 16.
All right.
It's from a Funen brewery.
Yeah.
And it's a popular one. You
cool.
can always get ale 16. It's fairly dark and fairly good.
Okay, I hear that you tried for something Russian or Ukrainian or Belarusian for this one. But
I did.
Yeah.
I did. But unfortunately, I didn't have time to go to the a store that sold imported beer.
Sure.
But I was checking out all the shelves for something that had Cyrillic on them.
We really should just be drinking vodka.
We should.
Skol.
Yeah. Nastrovje.
Nastrovje.
Mm-hmm. You know, at high school, I did have 2 years of Russian.
Yeah?
Yeah. So I read the letters. I can I can get meaning out of that if the word is not too complicated, but I can't speak any, really.
Did you read that banner in episode 4?
I always read banners and signs and everything, yeah, because I think it's quite fun to read those, yeah, letters. I don't remember.
No.
What that banner said.
It said something like, it's the title of I think the fourth episode, The Happiness of All Men or something, For the Happiness of All Men.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, before we go into the miniseries Chernobyl, what have you been up to?
I have been up to baby stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I figured.
I have not been up to anything else. Just before the show, I checked my letterbox diary.
Yeah.
And it's empty.
Yeah.
We do have Chernobyl in there. I locked that one. It's on Letterboxd.
Yeah.
Even though it's a TV series. That one I've got. But everything, like, you know, a lot of stuff has happened. Of course.
Mm-hmm.
The little guy here, Loki, is getting bigger. Like, he came out 50 centimeters. Now he's 61 centimeters. So he's already grown like more than 10 centimeters.
It's going well. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's starting to smile. He's starting to, you know, interact with us a little bit more than he has been. So that's just great.
Yeah. How old is he now? How many weeks?
He is 9 weeks.
9 weeks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Time flies. Before you know it, he'll be like riding a bike and graduating college, man.
I mean, time flies so much faster. We all already went up 2 sizes of diapers, which is weird to me.
Well,
you know, I just got used to the really tiny ones. Yeah. Now they're already growing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How is fatherhood with 2 little ones, man?
It is good.
Should I be scared?
You know? It is very different.
Be afraid.
I wouldn't be afraid because everything seems to fall into its natural place. Because you're used to having a kid.
Yeah.
It's not this huge change in your life. You know,
that's what I hear. Yeah.
You're already used to waking up at weird hours and you're already used to not being in charge of your own life.
Right.
You know. So having another one doesn't really make a huge difference in that sense.
Yeah. This is what I hear.
But on the other hand, I do think I'm starting to feel a little bit more tired. And there's some other things at play here when you need to split your attention between 2 children all of a sudden. And you used to spend 100% of your time with the one, and now you need to spend the same 100% of the time with 2.
Have you thought about this? And like in with regards to your children, I mean, Roshka, she's used to, for 3 years, to be the center of attention at all times. Mm-hmm. Like, Sumali, my Sumali is just like that.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking when my daughter arrives, she's going to be a totally different character in this regard, because she already has to, you know, she has to fight for the attention. So she may, she may turn out really, really different.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've always been thinking, I mean, if we're doing the same thing with the next kid, then everything will just, I mean, he'll be like Reskva.
Yeah.
Know? But there's no way we're going to do the same thing with him.
Exactly.
Because it is just not possible.
It's not possible. And
it's also co-taught by Reskva.
Right.
You know, Reskva is really going to show him the ropes.
Yeah.
And, I mean, right now he's just being cuddled a lot and rocked a lot and held a lot and all those things. And everything is meant really well, but she's very affectionate. And is yeah, really going at him. Yeah. You know?
That's great.
And
man.
We probably were more, we weren't nervous with Reskva, but we were more careful with
yeah.
her. So, yeah, I wouldn't be nervous, but it's definitely a different dynamic once you get to, actually, the logistics of it all is more troublesome or worrying for me.
Yeah.
Especially when this guy is going to go to some sort of daycare.
Yeah.
I can just foresee that it's going to be really, really complicated.
It's a logistical nightmare, man.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, work in logistics. I know what logistics are. I mean, trust me on this.
Yeah, it's... maybe you should give us some help, you know?
I can give you some pointers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Point you towards right now, some shipping firms and stuff, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, ship them to the daycare. That's a good idea.
Yeah, you can just like order a container and you know, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the expensive? Whole thing, like you said, you're more tired, and I get that, because this is the one thing that, well, they don't really tell you, but they do tell you, though, beforehand, before you become a parent. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're always tired. It's such a difference from not having children. I'm hoping the difference from 1 to 2 is not as big as from 0 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, for me, it's a coming. I mean, it's 37 weeks now, yeah, for sure, which is like full term, close. Really.
Yeah.
And we're just getting stuff ready. Oh, we're getting the bag ready, and we are like getting. Mm-hmm. I just put the little bed together today.
Mm-hmm.
And just we bought a chair for the car, and it's all about to. She's about to pop. She's huge now.
I saw
huge.
I saw. Yeah,
she's much bigger than with Simone.
Yeah.
So actually, she's so huge actually right now that we have a additional sonar to go to this week to see, just because the midwife thought, well, she's kind of large. I mean, let's go check this out. There's no cause for alarm, but
no.
Just
might just be
to,
twins.
Yeah, I mean, don't.
No.
I would welcome twins though. That was always something. Yeah, twin girls, that'd be good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We can
then
be
you
done.
Do
then.
Your own shining.
We can be done. Yeah, we can make my own shining. We did like make a shining of Simile that time.
Yeah,
remember that?
Yeah,
that
yeah, we did.
Thing.
We
yeah.
did. Yeah.
So it could be a theme, recurring theme.
Well, let's see if it's that.
But
not.
So you haven't but been watching anything?
Not at all.
No,
not
I
at
have,
all.
I have and stuff
have.
To say.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I think I said this last time, when I have time to relax, I do like to relax with something in the background that doesn't trouble me. And you can just occasionally turn your head and like laugh a little bit. So I've been doing Friends for the first time in like a decade. So it's pretty good. But what I have been watching as well with Simile a lot, like in the past month or so, is Paddington 1 and 2.
Oh.
And they're
for the first time
pretty good. No, I've been watching them a lot, but for the first time this recently.
Okay.
Both of them very, very good.
It's incredible movies.
Yes.
I think I tried to ask you to watch them so
you
could
did.
Do them here on the show because I think they're amazing.
Very good.
It's lovely
Truly.
To have a humble and a polite superhero. In the form of a bear.
Yeah, he has that superpower of looking at you.
Yes.
You don't want to get into get in his way
the stern
there.
Look.
That glare. I mean, Brendan Gleeson, he turns to. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, it's a bit silly sometimes, but it's just so heartfelt and a warm movie.
Yeah, it's great.
And I do love Hugh Grant.
Yeah. Yeah, he was good.
Yeah. And actually also like...
Hugh Bonneville is there, Sally Hawkins. It's, it's great cast.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one, they have an extra touch of British, like really good British actors. And it's really good. And it's funny. It's just great. Funny for everybody. It's broad when it has to be. And it's not so broad when it has to be as well.
It's surprisingly emotional. Surprisingly well constructed.
Yeah,
you know
that too.
It really hits the right beats all the time. I think it's a great family film.
Yeah,
and yeah, you know, Resco also just enjoyed it, probably for the bear being there. I think we also watched it in English. Did you watch it in Icelandic?
Yeah.
Yeah,
we watched it in Icelandic, and I can tell you Shimmer's favorite scenes. It's in the first one where he takes the toothbrushes and puts them into his ears. Mm-hmm. That apparently is very, 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 very funny. even for the 30th time, it's very, very funny. It's laugh out loud funny.
Wow.
And in the second one as well, he takes the... It looks like when they made number two, they knew what worked for the kids to get them hooked in the second one. So they do it again right at the beginning of number two. Okay. Paddington takes the toothbrushes and does his nose, I think, or something again. And Simon is just, yep, let's watch this.
Yeah. It's also crazy to use a thing, a device that's not meant for it. You know?
So simple, but so effective, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. Great, great films.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad that you caught up with them several times now.
Several times, yes.
Many, many times. Yeah. Maybe too many.
Yeah.
It was one of those films last year that critics wanted to be nominated as the best film of the year. Paddington 2.
For BAFTA or?
For the Oscars.
Oscars.
Yeah.
But we don't care about the Oscars.
No. But just give it some accolades.
I can get on board with BAFTAs for stuff. Yeah. That's
different.
Somehow better. Okay.
The Berlinale maybe.
Yeah.
Even.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Nothing else?
I have not much else to report. I mean, Chernobyl was 5 hours, so that took up a lot of my time in the past week. So
We also watched it on several occasions, you know, like also one episode on several occasions. While we were watching this, I was just going through HBO and I realized that Big Little Lies is starting. Well, actually, this Monday.
Yeah?
Last Monday when this show arrives.
Yeah, okay. Do you want to do like... how long is it now? 6?
I don't know. Like last one was 7, I think.
Okay, do you want to do like 3-2-2 or something?
Maybe. But that'd we also have Dark.
We have Dark coming up.
And I don't know. Like it depends a little bit. I think Dark... is a little bit more like the OA, in a way. Something that's a bit mind-bendy and something that might merit and be fun to go through, like, episode by episode.
Yeah, it's also German.
And it's also German, yeah.
And, I mean, Germans just took a real hit here with this beer, and I don't know. It's horrible.
Did you like the first season of Dark?
I thought it was... great fun, you know. I was excited about watching the next one, but it doesn't like really stay with me much.
No.
But it's good TV, and something we said about that.
Yeah, we should probably have touched upon The Rain, the Danish produced Netflix series.
Yeah,
which just had a second season.
Yeah.
And everybody was writing about it when it came out here in Denmark.
All right.
saying like it's amazing and we've been waiting so much. And I couldn't finish the first season. I thought it was so silly.
Well, you are very particular.
But did you try to watch?
I didn't. I listened to you. I probably shouldn't do that.
No, probably.
But we are a Nordic film podcast. We should just watch it. Just take the bullet and watch it.
But thanks for letting everyone know that they shouldn't listen to me about my opinions.
Yeah, that's a good advice right there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for the record, you shouldn't listen to Trikve either. Yeah.
just tune into something else, really.
Yeah.
All right. I think maybe we should just go ahead and tackle our main focus today, which is Chernobyl.
Well, the good we did. It doesn't matter. What does matter is that to them, justice was done. See, a just world is a sane world. There was nothing sane about Chernobyl.
I'm pleased to report that the situation in Chernobyl is stable. In terms of radiation, I'm told it's the equivalent of a chest X-ray.
No, Chernobyl is on fire. And every atom of uranium is like a bullet, penetrating everything in its path. Metal, concrete, flesh. Now Chernobyl holds over 3 trillion of these bullets. Some of them will not stop firing for 50,000 years.
That was a clip from Chernobyl, the new miniseries by HBO and Sky Atlantic. This thing has been taking the world by storm recently, and it's everyone is talking about, really. Don't you think, Rune?
It really is.
Yeah.
I think it came to my attention, like, by coincidence.
Yeah.
And one of my friends said he was going to watch the third episode. I was like, oh, Chernobyl. And then I looked it up, started watching it, and then all of a sudden everyone was talking about it.
Yeah, it's such a huge event in like the last, I guess, 100 years. Mm. Huge event. And it just had kind of been forgotten a little bit, you know, if you're not from the area. I think
the time.
Yeah, let's just get right into it. I think. I mean, how do you think? I mean, you are really brought into the Soviet atmosphere, I think. So there's like this great attention to detail.
There is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last year, we went to Lithuania.
Yeah.
Actually, for the summer.
Okay.
A few weeks. And the first thing I thought of was, wow, those buildings look like some of those buildings from Lithuania we saw.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, this show is recorded in Lithuania, but the architecture is so much this Soviet communistic way of building buildings.
Yeah, a lot of the show is shot in Lithuania on location there.
Yeah.
I mean, and I guess they couldn't get really close to the actual place. Maybe not safe. And
probably didn't want to bring a lot of high-profile actors in there.
No. You know, I'm not sure the insurance companies would you know, be okay with that.
No.
But,
But it gave off that, like, right off the bat, the feeling of the Soviet Union. And and wow, I mean, those the nuclear power plant, the interiors, like all the sets and the costumes, everything seems so real. And I had no point throughout this series where I was thinking that was a bit off.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I don't know too much about this area, but it to me, it just seemed like this was genuine.
Right.
And, it like the period also like taking place in the 80s, everything seemed right. That's quite amazing.
Everything pretty much seemed Soviet. Mm-hmm. Minuscule details here and there. Very well, what we would think would be Soviet, exactly. Because we did not enter the Soviet Union. I didn't. I'm sure you didn't.
No.
Before its fall, but there has been a lot of praise for it from people of the age that remember the Soviet Union, that are just dumbfounded by the details that the show brings us. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely. I mean, they really set the stage for us from the off, I would think.
But one of those, like one of the ways they set the stage is also to use soundscapes.
Yeah.
Throughout, like there's always sound in this film or like in this miniseries.
Yeah.
One particular sound that I really noticed a lot of was this Geiger counter.
The decimeter
device,
six Röntgen,
exactly. But just this tick 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 tick, scratching. It's throughout the film, in the soundtrack, in the soundscape, and then a lot of ominous drones and stuff like that. in the background. And it makes everything seem so dark and dull and scary and suppressive.
I agree. I mean, once the sound escape is contributing a lot to the whole feel of the series. Mm. I notice you say film. People just, you know, he's going to say film.
I am going to say film. That's because fine. I do feel, like we talked about that before the show, I do feel like this is a film.
Yeah.
Even Letterboxd, film,
basically,
considers it a film.
Yeah. So that's okay. But here we have a beautiful... Maybe the best Nordic connection ever.
Yes, we do.
Yes, because the sound designer is called Hildur Guðnadóttir. She's Icelandic. She's a cellist. And apparently she's a genius. Because, well, for one, she didn't use any instruments, musical instruments for this this sound. She went to Lithuania, looked at an abandoned or no longer practicing power plant. Walked around, recorded some noises. She was not banging on stuff to produce them. She was just the sounds of
observing
the corridors.
Observing noises.
She talked about it as well. Mm. A lot of corridors, long.
Yeah. Everywhere. She was talking in particular about a big iron door.
Yeah.
That made a weird squeaky sound.
Yeah.
Once in a while.
So I mean that might be unheard of. No instruments in a five-hour piece of sound? I don't know.
I think it's done, you know. I think it's a great thing to do. Thinking beyond instruments is amazing.
For a classically trained musician, no less.
Yes.
That's something. Right there.
She was feeling experimental, I think.
And she does contribute a lot to the whole thing. I mean, it's I would say, the whole production design is fantastic, I would say.
Yeah.
But sound, let's say the soundscape is a part of that, then that's the big, really big contributor, I would say.
Yeah. You do say sometimes that... music in a movie brings it up like 70% or something if you choose the right thing, you know?
Yeah.
And this thing is really giving you the sense of dread also throughout.
Well, yeah, totally. You know? Not just dread, though.
No,
just like the sheer hopelessness and the horribleness of it all, and and just the feel of the whole Soviet feel. I mean, that's really the thing—the Soviet feel you get.
Mm-hmm.
When that's the feel,
the Soviet feel that you think is the Soviet
that
feeling.
You connect to the whole Soviet thing.
Yeah, yeah. I really hope that's right.
You know, right.
How the Soviet feel was.
Yeah.
Because it seems right.
It seems right. Yeah. It fits. Yeah. Another thing about the kind of supporting structure of the whole thing, the costumes. I mean, no, the costumes, we talked about that. I meant the makeup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the makeup of the people dealing with radioactivity.
Yeah.
That was
pretty
something
horrid.
To behold.
Yeah.
Right?
It was very well done.
Yeah.
I had really no idea. And I'm pretty sure that a lot of people wouldn't have any idea of what radioactive contamination could be.
I guess, yes. Exposure.
And exposure. So I think that's the first time I saw it. You know, should we get into a little bit like how this this thing is structured?
Sure.
Like where we start at the at Pripyat.
Pripyat, yes.
Where like the day before that the power plant is actually exploding. And then we follow the events immediately after, you know, it explodes.
Yeah.
And I completely forgot where I was going with this.
That's good. That's
right
good.
Now.
That's good podcasting right there. Thank you.
Right now.
Moving on.
No, but I just thought that we went a little bit ahead of ourselves by talking about the people who were being exposed to this.
Yeah.
No. Like, there in the beginning, you have this feeling of it might not be that bad.
Mm-hmm.
All the people in the city have no idea about radioactivity, it seems.
Yeah.
And you don't really, you're not able to see the radioactivity.
You know? I guess you could say that, but when they go to the bridge to watch the fire, watch the glow,
yes,
you kind of see it. It's presented like I guess snowflakes or something like that. But
like a shimmer.
Yeah. Apparently there were no survivors from that bridge.
No, apparently not.
And one of the most horrible scenes in the whole thing was when the fireman's wife is at the hospital and trying to look for her husband, and she meets that guy with the baby, and he begs her to take the baby, and he can see as he's been exposed, he's in a bad way, and you don't see the baby, but I think that maybe for me was one of the most difficult scenes in the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see how they were close. I mean, Pripyat was closer to the plant than Chernobyl. If I understand it correctly, these are two separate towns.
Yeah.
And Pripyat was closer to the plant than Chernobyl was.
Yeah. But yeah, you see some examples of the exposure to radioactivity, but it's still this enemy in the miniseries. See, I'm saying miniseries now.
Right. gotcha.
That you cannot see, you know, and they're battling this thing that...
They have not been educated about it, obviously.
Yeah, but even the scientists who are... saying what might happen, you have this feeling that they know what's going to happen, but they've never experienced it.
Right.
Like, this is something is beyond what they ever imagined.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's lying underneath this thing. It's almost like watching, in the beginning here, a horror thriller type film,
mm-hmm.
where you can't see the enemy,
mm-hmm.
and they're trying their best to contain it.
Yeah.
And they don't even have any idea. It's like walking down that dark hallway, and you can scream at them that they shouldn't go, but they just keep on going, and you know, they get killed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's very horrible stuff, and I think they showed it really well.
They did.
Like, how this event went about.
I was almost in tears at one point. I don't remember what mm-hmm. point, but yeah, it kind of crept up on me. You know,
yeah,
I'm not like, you know, this is just TV. I don't need to be bawling about TV, but mm-hmm. it kind of got me at that one point.
Yeah.
I don't know. But you said something about structure, and let's just talk about how it is structured. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a fairly normal narrative structure, I would say. They start, the first episode is like, it covers like 8 hours, and then the next one covers like a couple of days, and so on. It gets
mm-hmm.
gets more time each time, and
mm-hmm.
it ends like in months.
Yeah,
I thought the script was really, really well made.
We do, though, have a flashback in the beginning. Like, we start after the events.
Yeah.
And we have a bit of flashback in the middle of it, where we see the actual life in Pripyat before the event. But yeah, other than that, pretty straightforward. Also, at one point, this, like, the main character, the scientist, Valery Legasov, has to go and defend Russia, basically,
in Vienna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was looking forward to seeing his his statement in Vienna, but they choose to stay in the Soviet Union.
Uh-huh.
They don't go outside of that, and I actually like that about the show.
I respect that as well.
You know, I respect that this is just, it's a Soviet story.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want like, we don't get outside of that.
Right.
So, yeah. Please go ahead.
Yeah. script work is a lot about character construction, I would say. And we can look at that and then go into the main characters and then actors. But I thought it was pretty professional, if not spectacular. Just
mm-hmm.
you look for flaws, and if they're there, they bug you. And
mm-hmm.
here, I was not bothered by anything character-wise. I mean, there's something. I mean, it's debatable, the character of Olga Komyuk,
mm-hmm.
Who is not a real person. I mean, Legasov and Sherbina mm-hmm. were real people.
Mm-hmm.
In real life, Legasov was helped by many scientists.
Yes,
he was leading a team. I think it were all men. I think that were like helping him. No.
Like, I've heard that. I mean, the Soviet Union was quite progressive.
I heard that as well.
Yeah, and it seemed like a majority of them, maybe not a majority, but an equal amount were women.
Maybe not equal, but more progressive than the West, yes. I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, I just saw pictures
mm-hmm.
of meetings he was taking,
mm-hmm.
and there were no women I could see. That's all I'm saying. No. Yeah. But I agree with the choice of making Komyuk a woman.
Yeah. Yeah.
It also, yeah, it's just, I mean, it's just the right thing to do. And if you can get Emily Watson, make every character female. I mean, she's great. She was great.
She is really great.
Yes.
She is, though, the one thing about the show that I do feel is a little bit constructed.
Yeah.
You know, because she has a bit of the MacGuffin quality. She is the one who really says the right things at the right times, and she shows up at very particular places, hard places to show up in as just another scientist.
Sure, she's carrying a lot of stuff as well. She is representing that committee that helped Legasov. Mm-hmm. In the aftermath, she's also, like you say, kind of a MacGuffin in some areas, and she's also like Legasov's conscience.
She is,
yeah.
Like they put a lot of stuff on her,
yeah.
And it's the only character they could mold because it's the only fictional character.
She's also
and it just makes it. No, we're going to get into that a little bit later.
Yeah.
The whole legality of everything, you know?
She's also very Western, I would say. I've heard criticism that she would not have done a lot of the stuff she did.
Mm.
Like Sherbina says at one point. I mean, I've seen a lot of I've known a lot of braver men than you are. And when push comes to shove, they say nothing. Mm-hmm. And that's how it was. You have to be extraordinary to do stuff like that. I mean, I guess Legasov did, you know?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. And she is representing his conscience, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the stuff she does is not really. She's a dramatic tool.
Writer's tool.
Yes. Yeah. to move things along. And MacGuffin is not bad.
No.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy her. I did enjoy her presence all the time. Yeah.
I enjoy seeing Emily Watson always. Mm-hmm. She's great. I have to mention, I thought the Legasov characters was well constructed. And just to get an actor like that, Jared Harris, to convey that is just he was great.
Yes.
He is great.
Yeah. and the fact that this is a movie about a scientist who is like actually being portrayed as this quirky scientist who is just all about the science behind everything.
Yeah.
I think that is great.
Mm-hmm. Of course, they do take liberties with the truth. I mean, I guess we can get into that, but let's just say that
no way
that is to be expected. Mm-hmm. And if you could put your like critical glasses on and say it's too much, but I don't think so. I think it's just the right amount, I guess. You need,
I think, it,
for
it,
a miniseries, you need to make there needs to be drama. You know?
Yeah. And there needs to be relationships.
Yes.
There needs to be something to latch on to. It's not a documentary. It you might call it a docudrama.
True.
Almost.
Almost,
yeah.
But Vadim Legasov had a family. He had a wife and kids. And they are not portrayed in the film. And I mean, the writer Craig Mazin, he explained it quite well. I think he said that usually when they do it like that, they tend to be like sad characters, and they don't really get like fill out as characters. And I get that. You don't have time to fill them out as characters, really. They're just people waiting for dad.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
He said, I didn't want to do that to them.
No.
And I get that. I actually support that. Mm-hmm. I am supporting the guy who made Hangover 2 and Hangover 3.
Yeah, maybe we should rewatch those two movies and see if he made the same.
Yeah, kind of I didn't choices. Watch them, so no.
They're not spending much time on the. Hey, no, never mind. I haven't watched them. No, but it's so true. Like, focus on the task at hand,
mm-hmm.
really, and the main story.
Yeah.
Which leads me to another thing, though, because in the aftermath of the explosion, we get almost an entire episode about the how they try to clear the area surrounding the power plant, where they have squads that go around and kill all animals.
You're talking about episode 4?
Yes.
Yes.
And I thought it was very interesting because you get to see what other things this explosion affected.
Right.
However, it seemed very contained because you followed this small group of people doing this right. very specific task in a town where they go out and shoot dogs. And it's never addressed later. It's one of those things like they show something that probably was right, probably something that has happened, but it didn't really forward any of the story in the series. It seemed a little bit like when the series ended, I was thinking that was a bit weird that we didn't get to see what that was all about. It was just like this trying to expand the horizons of the show, really.
I felt it was mostly for drama. It didn't do much for me.
But it didn't contain any of the characters that we knew. So we didn't really have any connection to any of them. I understand following, I think her name was Ludmilla, the woman who Ignatsov, had a firefighter for their husband. I was also a little bit worried about her character because I felt like it was too small of a story. But I understand why they did it, why they followed her and the firefighters in order to see the devastating effect of the exposure. And also tying it into what happened immediately, what might happen later, and how the radioactivity stays like that. I actually thought that was good. But this other story, you couldn't latch on to anything, and you were continuously thinking, how does it tie together? But it was a bit unfocused in that way.
I guess you can say that.
Yeah. There was one beautiful scene, though, in the beginning of episode 4 with the old woman who didn't want to leave her land.
Yeah, was that episode 4?
Yeah, I think it was episode 4 also. Maybe 3.
Yeah, they were evacuating, and that's the only time they show any problems with the evacuation. When they evacuate Pripyat, there's nothing. Mm-hmm. People were told they would be back soon, take one suitcase, and no pets. And that's it.
Yeah.
I guess that was a pretty good scene. Although, how they shot the cow, it was clever, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't connect to that scene much. No.
I wanted to connect to it.
Yeah.
Yes. But
I just bought the whole thing about the evacuation. This is the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. People are not going to be rising up against authority much. That's not the culture.
But apparently some, like what that one scene said, the very old Soviets.
Yeah.
Who has their land. It's not going to go anywhere. They survived many things, but yeah.
Yeah.
But that was a interest. I'm going to stop saying interesting, but it was a very like the struggle there was the story was different. You know, like you thought, now we can just as well go into it, but you thought that he was going to shoot her, like he threatened her.
Yeah.
But actually, if you combine it with what you see later with the squads going out and killing animals, they actually try to contain the radioactive spread by killing the cow. So they would kill the cow anyway. So it was not a threat. It was just a way, like they were going to take her anyway, and they were going to save her.
Right.
They were trying to save her and kill the cow.
Yeah.
But you know, like the emphasis of what, like it seemed like a really bastard mean thing to do to this woman, but it was actually out of care,
I guess. Yeah
And that was like a and that's why it was interesting. However, I did want that particular scene to have been in Russian. I don't know why. Well, maybe because it was this very old lady. It seemed a bit weird that this one lady was so eloquent in British English. And they did do it sometimes throughout the show where certain segments were in Russian still. The emergency calls and some other set pieces. And I think this one scene would have benefited from have been, you know, in Russian.
But it's a scene where
it's a standalone
scene. Where the people need to know what's going on. And when they use Russian, it's in the background or in places where you actually know what's being said.
Yeah.
Never mind what language is in, you know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I would think, on the other hand, that it would be weird if they did put it in Russian, because then they would have to have subtitles.
And they did. They did have subtitles sometimes.
Yeah.
Here.
Okay. There is one guy I want to mention. This is maybe my beef here, and that's Paul Ritter, who is Dyatlov, bad guy.
Dyatlov, yeah.
Yeah. He's quite a bad guy, isn't he?
He is.
But there's no
development still.
There's no deviating from the bad guy theme here. There's nothing. He's just evil. I mean, from what I've read and listened to, he was just a really difficult man.
Yeah.
But it would have been nice to paint, just to do something, some ambiguity with him.
I wouldn't necessarily say evil. It seems like he's very greedy and he's very self-serving.
Just a complete dick to everybody around him.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I've never met people like that. They're just completely to everybody around them. Just, I don't know. Do these people exist really?
They might exist.
Yeah. I guess.
But they might have their moments. Also,
he was. I missed a certain, ambiguity with him. But yeah.
But also, many of the scenes with him are not really scenes that have been sourced that well. I'm thinking, like the source material they've based those scenes on.
Yeah, everybody and in the scenes is dead.
Yeah. And you do have some statements from them, but that's
so I guess that's it. By choice then, that making him just really bad. Yeah, and it's a little bit annoying because that's a choice they make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they like many of these like retelling of what happened in that control room of Reactor 4.
Yeah.
Is like guesswork.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. So, he's been overly dramatized, I guess, sometimes. But it makes for some thrilling events or a thrilling sequence.
Yeah, of course. We kind of needed a villain. Mm-hmm. For this is appealing to a broad spectrum of people. So. Mm-hmm. So that's good, I guess, in some ways. I think we've covered the acting thing.
What do you think about the accents, though?
The accents,
because the actors in general are European actors.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of Swedish actors here.
Uh-huh.
I think Gorbachev is. David Danzig, Swedish, Danish, I think, actor.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We also have Fares, a Swedish actor,
mm-hmm.
a very well-known actor in Scandinavia.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot. Also, we do have the music or like the soundscapes being made by an Icelandic person, but we also have apparently I went through the list on Letterboxd and we have Baltasar Breki Samper.
Really?
Is, you know, Baltasar Kormakr's son.
Yeah.
He's in two episodes.
Really?
Of this show. Yeah.
One of the miners, maybe?
Maybe one of the naked miners.
Yeah.
Maybe. But I like how they've used European people who all have various accents that they use in English.
Right.
Because usually this type of movie would be like would take me out of the situation when they don't speak the native tongue.
Yeah.
But they do it in such a great way here, and it's weird that it actually works so well. But they all have their different ways of speaking, and it just works. You even have all letters in Cyrillic.
Cyrillic, yes.
And, yeah, Cyrillic, and you just accept it. You totally accept that they speak English, and never, all but once, you're drawn out of it.
I agree. This choice they make, and it's... it's definitely their choice that they just ask the actors not to do Russian accents. Mm-hmm. Because that would have been easy. That would have been Hollywood. Just do the Russian accent. And it was nobody would have really cared. But that's that tiny thing, they just don't do that. And it's one of the best things they do here. So the language accent, it doesn't matter at all.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's better to stray a little bit further away from the truth in order to convey your point.
Sure. Politically, this is like a huge thing. You can. There's a lot to bite into here if you think about it from that political point of view. Communism and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the whole. They really place you in that mood, that decades of suppressing single political party being in mm-hmm. power. You really get that sense strongly from the beginning. I mean, that speech when the local committee got together. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. the elder just stepped up and that speech, I think they pulled that speech out of something real. Mm-hmm. I seem to remember the director talking about that. Yeah. Something from Brezhnev or something.
Yeah.
And this is how it is here.
It was such a a fun, not a fun speech, but it was a strange speech because it seemed like a pep talk. It seemed like you are the people. And then the conclusion of the speech was something completely...
But for the glory, for the glory of the USSR. And that's a huge, huge thing here because, well, while we can, in the West, we can say, wow, that's crazy, man. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, when you think about how they solved these problems, how they mobilized hundreds of thousands of people to actually take care of this huge, massive problem for like a continental problem.
Mm-hmm.
How they did it, and how people kind of. Well, I guess when you lived in a country like this for long, when the culture is like set in stone, like it was, you think of yourself as a foot soldier for the whole, you know. It's not individuality at any point there. So it is, well, easier to get people to do things like go on to the roof to clean up the graphite for 90 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much, you know, placing your life at huge risk.
Yeah.
And getting divers to go, and what did they do? They
had to get some water out.
Yeah,
of turn the tanks.
Turned on some on some pumps to pump water out of the tanks,
mm-hmm. Open
below
some valves.
The reactor. Mm-hmm. Apparently, two engineers. Of them are still alive.
Yes, exactly. That was quite amazing.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's not so bad being radioactive. Exposed.
So you could say, while you criticize communism and the whole suppressive thing that it follows it and goes with it everywhere, you can say that it creates heroes. It creates heroes. And it certainly created a lot of heroes here. But at the same time...
Also a lot of casualties.
Yeah. At the same time, you can say communism and what always comes with communism and totalitarianism and suppressive regimes is what caused this. So without that, you wouldn't have to clean up, you know. Yeah. But the cleanup was successful because of you had people sacrificing themselves for the whole, willingly
the perfect
or not,
system.
Willingly or not. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And there's also a lot of maybe they don't get the full story, especially those people who run out on the roof. It doesn't necessarily seem like they've been told what it actually entailed.
No.
Great
scene, by the way, real time. Yeah,
very great scene.
Very good scene. And probably close to the truth as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just great. And of course, he looked over the roof, which he wasn't supposed to do.
Yes.
So there's a lot to bite into if you're thinking about politics here.
And it's so perfectly matched with the power plant exploding and everything that goes on ground level.
Yeah.
Contra the stuff that goes on the governmental level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, again, one of those things where I'm thinking, is this written together in that way? Because it seems perfect. But it's also beautiful. Like with, you said that Dyatlov, the really evil guy, was just pure evil. But putting him into this position and then getting to know that the government actually put them in the dangerous position in the first place.
Right.
It made him a little bit like his character changed.
Right.
In that power dynamic.
Yeah.
And
what he was doing was trying to move up within the means he knew.
Yeah, and it, like this, the system forced him to.
Yeah,
and you also have a scene earlier with Emily Watson talking to a foreman or like a guy high up who apparently was a shoe salesman.
Right.
Once, but he made it to the higher level.
Yeah.
And it's like all the people working are just trying to get up by any means. And that might be why they're you know, risking everything for the country.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in order to get that heroic statement, you know, like it's something that this regime really values.
Yeah.
Even Legasov was about to become a hero, and that would have bumped him up in the hierarchy.
So there's
a lot of that stuff going on here.
Apparently that scene with the shoe factory boss guy mm-hmm. is one of the things that is a little removed from what actually could have, what is in the realm of possibility. So, yeah, but
the writer did it.
Well, we really get a sense of the system,
mm-hmm.
right? We can say that,
mm-hmm.
and maybe it's a sense of the system that just agrees with what we already thought the system to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't know, but it does ring true to me, right?
It does ring true.
And I mean, we can talk about also how this, like, I this is what I wrote down. I mean, this is an anthropological study, a lot mm-hmm. of it, because all these people that perform heroic acts, we don't know if they, you know, want to or just scared not to. I mean, look at the guys, Akimov and Toptunov, that go and try to open the water
valves.
Yes,
yeah,
totally. As it turned out, unnecessary and didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they knew.
They were scared into it.
They absolutely knew they were mm-hmm. Going to die from it. And they did. Mm-hmm. They did it all the same. Mm-hmm. And you can't, there's no other way of looking at it than they were just scared not to.
Mm-hmm.
But I think also that they can't have been sure they were going to die. I mean, I'm thinking they were not well informed, as well informed as they should have been about the situation they were in.
But they were probably one of the most informed people.
Sure.
There.
Sure.
Like, unlike the citizens of Pripyat.
Right. So this begs the question, did they have free will, even?
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, you do see the power struggle in the last episode.
Yeah.
And why they felt like they were forced to do so. Because if they weren't, then...
Yeah.
You know, it was a dilemma they were standing in, you know.
Yeah.
Had they not done what they were asked to do, then they would never have been able to survive.
Right. I mean, it's something to think about. If this would have happened, like an accident or man-made accident or whatever, in the U.S. or in Europe, somewhere else in the West, where people are not used to this suppressive environment, would you get the heroes? Would you get people to do things? And I guess the question is, do they do things only out of fear, or do they do things because they actually believe in the cause? And do they look at themselves as just one soldier for the whole. You know, is there a power plant in Denmark? Nuclear power plant?
Nope.
No?
No.
No. There's none here, of course. That's we have neither windmills. Here nor there because we have earthquakes here. It's not very smart to do it. But I'm thinking if you just place yourself in these steps of these people, and what would you do? Of course, you can't compare because you're not, you know. But with our background, we would like, yeah, let's just leave, just go away, and make this island inhabitable. You know, who cares? We'll just try to stay alive.
Mm-hmm. But this was a huge, you know, area.
You're right. Right.
Still, but. Yeah, I know it's.
We can say that it makes you think about the nature of things, political, human, just the human condition,
what
I guess.
Makes you do, yeah. What makes you do what's right?
Right. Yeah. It gets you there, as a whole, when it all comes down to it, I really enjoyed this. I'm quite happy with it. I there are some drawbacks, sure, but
there were. But it's I also really enjoyed it. I thought it was for some reason a well timed film, or TV series.
I agree.
Because of the whole focus on, like they have spun this film, the Chernobyl disaster, to be about. Lies,
right?
And what the government is keeping from you. Apparently, one of the main flaws of Chernobyl was due to a redacted thing from a report,
right?
So that's the whole turning point here. That lies come back to bite you,
yeah.
And it's much easier to just say no, it didn't happen, and then profit. Right, then and there, but at some point you'll have to pay the price, and there's a lot of lying going on, and a lot of untruth and doublespeak
and hate,
in society today, and I think I think that climate change is a big. Thing for why they made this film right now, because you do have power, which is you have nuclear power, which is not a very polluting type of energy,
right?
But it's highly unstable,
right?
And it seems like a call for attention that nuclear power is still not the answer, even though it's not a pollutant in the same way. Also, just the whole thing about lies, you know, that that people have known about something happening to the climate for a long, long time, and now you start seeing maybe some effects of it, and there's still people who are completely against it.
I see your point. I hadn't thought about it in regards to climate change, but I take that point. I think it's really well placed. In time, doing it now for some reason, I'm not sure I can wrap my head around why exactly. I mean, it's the whole thing with lies and totalitarianism, because there is a movement towards that, because the far right stupid hate thing that's going on in Europe right now, it's always going to end in something like that if it is allowed to, right?
Yeah, we just had an election here in Denmark.
Yeah.
Where we all of a sudden had three quite right-wing parties, two new ones, and one actually getting into...
You're talking far right, Rune, right? Because right is not...
Yes.
Right is not right. Wrong.
No, right? No, but very right, far right.
Yeah.
Alt-right.
Yeah, you mean you're talking a stupid... right, stupidity right. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's scary stuff.
It is. And so it adds to that conversation for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow, right place, right time kind of thing.
Yeah.
Maybe even the timing of the release. I don't know. There seems to be nothing else going on.
No.
If you think about it. And this is, what's competing here? John Wick 3? You know?
Yeah.
What's going on else?
Seems nothing else going on. Also. Yeah. No. There's a lot of TV series and a lot of superheroes. And like this one just had a different feel about it.
Yeah. One more question, really. How truthful were they, do you think?
Yeah. I believe that they really tried to be close to the truth, but the truth that they themselves, or like he, the creator, thought to be the truth.
And also what they can sell us. I mean, I guess I think he's as truthful as he possibly can be.
Yeah.
He does say that making it real was kind of an obsession, everything placing us there, which they did really well. That's maybe the best aspect of the whole thing, how they placed us right there. Are there any like
favorite
parts you want to mention?
For it being truthful or...
No.
Untruthful?
No, just whatever.
No, I actually wanted to get a little bit into that whole thing because it is an issue you have with these films that are based on very well-known facts or like events. Yeah. Where you don't have the facts. Because you need to make some choices, especially when you have with the movie medium, you know, like you have choices as like framing and you have like where to put the cameras, what kind of underlying music do you want to put on? So there's a lot of subjectivity being put onto the pictures here.
Sure.
And you could say if it strayed away from what actually happened, like to some degree, it would be bad. But I actually do think that even though it's close or far from the truth, it makes you think about Chernobyl. It makes you think about this event. And it makes you want to know more.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it might not be the exact truth that you're being fed here. Even though you have a character who was not at all present, but is like a combined version of 50 odd scientists,
right?
It's still the heart of the story, which is you have a horrible situation where the people came together and actually fixed it, and then you as the viewer can go and look up a lot of stuff. I know for one that I've been looking a lot on YouTube trying to find the real footage from the courtroom because they go into great detail of putting microphones and cameras into that courtroom. So it has been recorded.
All right.
There's even a scene with a guy running in and moving a microphone so you can hear Legasso
speak. Yeah, I noticed that. It's unlikely that it's on YouTube, right?
Well, I mean, it could be shared there somehow, but yeah, it's unlikely. There are some shots from it.
The Soviet Union. I'm sure Putin was not. That's just that's YouTube this thing. You know, see how many clicks we get. And
now there are shots, like there are YouTube clips with people sitting and going through the material, where you can actually see it. But it's basically what you've seen already in the show here.
Mm-hmm.
Like at the end you see some stock footage and that's the footage you see.
Okay.
But it's there and you want to know more. You want to know what actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
So it draws attention to it and It sparks a lot of discussions and thoughts with people.
Mm-hmm.
And
I find myself wanting to talk, just one more thing about the scene with the dogs.
Okay.
The whole puppy scene.
Yeah.
You know, and since we're talking about how close they are to the truth and all that, apparently they did cut another scene where a dog is really in a bad way because of radiation, and they want to put it out of its misery, but they don't have bullets, and which is like even worse than the whole puppy thing.
Mm-hmm.
So he did talk a lot about Craig Mazin that he did cut stuff that was too much. So what I take from that is that it could have been more tugging at you, you know. It could have been more trying to pull you this way and that dramatically.
Mm.
But it seems to me that choices were made to not do that. And that is always good.
Yeah.
You know, as well as with the music, there were no instrument, there were no strings, you know.
No, even though she was a cellist, or is.
She is a cellist, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So, so I am rating it really high, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too.
And like it can't have a season two.
It can't.
It can't. No. So it's good.
So it is a film.
Yeah.
It is a very long film. It's a 5-hour film.
I guess.
And it's definitely a great one.
All right. So I think we are pretty much done here.
I think so too. And I think you're all in for a treat once Craig Mazin is writing another script for maybe a sequel to The Hangover. maybe a crossover
episode
or something.
Yeah.
At least Craig Mazin is someone to watch because his trajectory is an odd one.
It's an odd one, yeah. I give him full marks for this. So, so here, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. For us, I don't know what's next. We will just see.
I don't know.
You know?
I mean, in 2 weeks, you might have stuff on your hands.
Yeah, I might have two kids.
Two kids.
We'll see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I'm unlikely to go to the movies in the next few months.
I'm having a hard time going to the movies, and I have a movie theater just around the corner.
Yeah.
Really. I should try to go there, but maybe we should just focus on streaming these days and movies released on streaming, because that will make it much easier for us.
Yeah.
Maybe play with the format here.
Right. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed this our discussion. If you haven't watched Chernobyl, go watch it. If you haven't watched it, why are you listening to this?
Hopefully we didn't give too much away, so you can actually go back and watch it now.
Yeah. Go and enjoy it. But
it's on HBO.
I guess we'll see you next time, whenever that will be, hopefully in 2 weeks.
And if you have some comments for us, we are on Facebook and we're on Twitter and we're on SoundCloud. Just do a search for The Conversation and Nordic Film Podcast. Also, go to our website, theconversationpodcast.net.
Right.
You can send us comments and emails from there. Please do so.
Yeah.
Is that about it?
That's about it. So,
all right.
Until next time.
Thank you for tuning in.
Bye-bye.